It's at the letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
It's something that, you know, we don't necessarily want to push too much, just for the simple fact that we have a little extra time with spring training right now. And just making sure that whenever I step back on the field, it's ready to go and I'm ready to be able to push it.
A couple weeks, I guess. And then we just, you know, really nothing more we can do. Just take, when he gets to that point, he's ready to go. But there's enough time left. He should be fine.
It's at the letters for Tuesday, February 21st on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, this is the last time that I will be seeing you for a couple weeks, because you, my friend, are going to Dunedin, Florida tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Basically ready. Got a bit of packing to do, but yeah, looking forward to it. So it should be a good couple weeks, and then we'll be down. We overlap for like a day, right?
Yeah, we got a day of overlap when you pass the baton to me.
Exactly.
And Shy will be passing the baton to you.
Yep.
Shy's been doing good work down there, man.
Great stuff.
Great story on Joe Smith today. That was awesome. A lot of stuff I didn't know before. Yeah, he had the Jose Bautista comments. Yep. He's had real good stuff, man. He's setting the bar high.
Yeah, he's off to a good start.
Are you ready to meet that bar? Are you ready to soar past it?
Well, I don't know about soaring past it, but just want to, you know, give all I can to the team, and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
You are a team player. I will say that about you, Ben Nicholson Smith. You looking forward to anything in particular this spring? I mean, yeah. It's kind of a boring camp.
Well, compared to last year, I mean, it hasn't been as, you know, high intensity, I would say, off the start. I'm looking forward to, you know, I know it's spring training games, but I am looking forward to the games in the sense that you can start to draw conclusions, and usually those conclusions end up being completely off base, but you can at least start to draw them. I mean, this time last year, we were watching Joe Biagini for the first time, Pat Venditti. Those were a couple of guys who impressed early on and then actually ended up pitching for the Jays in the course of the season.
It's going to be interesting because there's, you know, the Blue Jays basically aren't, I don't think, going to have many of their main rotation pieces pitching early in camp. Like Aaron Sanchez isn't going to be, you know, it's going to be backed off. You know, you're going to have Marco Estrada and Jay Happ and Marcus Stroman. I think Stroman's definitely going to WBC. I think Happ and Estrada are going if their teams make it to the second round. You know, I think that you're going to see some, you've got, you know, some what's that guy's name? So you got some Jeff Beliveau in your future, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
You got some Gavin Floyd.
Brett Oberholzer.
Some Lucas Harrell in your future.
Yeah, this is what we have to look forward to. It'll be fun, though. And then, you know, you get to see the other teams, and sometimes their prospects are interesting, or their veteran guys are interesting. You know, the players trying to build back some value after a down year or two. So it's always fun to see those kind of unfamiliar names, or familiar names in unfamiliar places.
Yeah, no, that'll be good. So we'll talk to you probably next week, maybe even later this week if something crazy happened, if anything happens in this camp. You know, there really just hasn't been too many storylines coming out of Dunedin just yet. But the main one so far is that Josh Donaldson is injured. He has hurt his calf sprinting, and he expects to be out for about 2 to 3 weeks. If there was ever a time for the best player on your team to have an injury of this sort, now would be it. I mean, I guess the offseason would be it, but, you know, if there's ever a time for an in-season or in-team activities injury, this is probably the time that you want Josh Donaldson to go down with something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. At the same time, you got to be a little concerned if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, just because this is someone who, you know, I'm not going to say that they can't win without him, because obviously they could, but it would be a whole lot harder.
7-win player.
Yeah. So
I mean, this is a guy who brings you the most wins of anyone on your team.
Exactly. So if you say the Jays right now are probably, you know, an upper 80s win team.
Yeah.
And then you take away 7 wins from that, then you're looking at as, you know, high 70s win team or a low 80s win team. That is not a contender. So we're a long way from talking about Josh Donaldson missing a single regular season game, let alone the full season. But it's one of those things that makes you look and pause, because even to miss a couple of weeks of spring training, well, okay, that's going to cut his spring training in half, and he still will have a few weeks left. And as we talked about in the last couple of podcasts that we did last week, a lot of position players only need a few weeks. So in theory, he'll still have enough time.
Pete Orr says you only need 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah.
I think on my concern-o-meter, I'm at like, I'm at moderate. You know what I mean? Like I'm at moderate concern on this one. Cause like it's worse than I thought it was going to be when I initially heard about it.
Yep.
The fact that that he went for an MRI, not a good sign. The fact that he is on crutches, not a good sign. The fact that he's not going to do anything for 3 weeks, not a good sign. So I'm at moderate. I'm not at low anymore. I'm at moderate. But, you know, this is a good time of year that you can kind of nip this sort of thing in the bud. He's got nothing but time. And he's already in Dunedin, where the Blue Jays, all their rehab facilities are there. All their high-performance people are there. Their best, you know, specialists for this kind of stuff. I mean, they can design a program for him to get back on his feet.
And even if he needs a month, I mean, let's say it went from the 18th of February to the 18th of March.
Yeah.
He would still have a couple weeks.
Still have 2 weeks.
You know, and we've seen guys, whether it's Edwin Encarnacion, we've seen other guys miss time in spring training and still get their timing back. I mean, this is a very experienced big league player. It's not like he needs to work on refining his base running or work on refining his defense. He has those elements of his game in place. So spring training for him, more so than for a less experienced, less established player, is about getting timing at the plate. It's not about refining, you know, we talk about Aaron Sanchez, maybe working on a changeup. Donaldson is a complete polished player. For him, it's timing. And so as long as he gets a couple weeks in there, he should be okay.
Edwin Encarnacion, who you mentioned, basically didn't have a spring last year.
Yeah.
They basically didn't play at all. And then dude went out and hit like 42 bombs, second best hitter on the team, essentially. I'm quickly looking up his splits to see if he started slow. I don't really remember. Who can remember last April? So long ago. Last April/March. So Edwin did start slow in 25 games, 104 plate appearances across the very end of March and April. A 694 OPS. Not so good. You know, he only had 3 home runs. You know, he struck out a lot more than he walked. Struck out 25 times, walked only 7. But then in May, OPS went up to 817. And then in June, it was 1185. And then he was back to himself for the rest of the year. So there was a little bit of an adjustment period there for Edwin, not having a spring and trying to find his feet in April. We'll see how long this Josh Donaldson thing goes on for. Maybe you expect a little bit of that. Same time, Josh Donaldson's such a good hitter.
Yeah.
And he's really, I think, over the last kind of year and a bit, gotten so much better at pitch recognition and not chasing and not expanding the zone, waiting for his pitch, taking his walks, those kind of things, that I think he'd be fine even if he did miss a month of spring.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if it's any more, then they do have reason to raise that concern level from moderate. But, you know, for now, it's more like a reminder that the Jays are very dependent on Josh Donaldson, more so than any other player in all likelihood. I mean, you could point to guys in the rotation too. And of course, Aaron Sanchez comes to mind when you're talking about that. But Donaldson is, you just can't replace him. No team in baseball can replace him.
Another thing that encourages me about this particular injury and this particular player is that Josh Donaldson is, here's just some facts about Josh Donaldson's calves. Number one, they're huge. If you've ever seen Josh Donaldson like head to toe, I don't know if you've noticed this, the man has enormous calf muscles. They're massive. It's like a running joke in the clubhouse. You know how they play soccer before games, yeah, and you'll see them around. And very rarely, very seldom do you see Josh Donaldson participate in that. I remember one time, Ryan Goins told me it was somewhat in jest, but also like there was a kernel of truth there. He was like, the guy has no handles in soccer because his calves are so big.
Wow.
So that's the Ryan Goins scouting report on Josh Donaldson as a soccer player. So this guy's got big ass calves, and he works on them a lot. He's told me that he does because of the turf, and he believes, and I don't know, it could be kind of like a bro science-y thing, but like he believes that if you have really big calves, it helps take the brunt off of your joints, your knees, your back, your hips, like the whole kind of kinetic chain situation. He's told me he believes that by working a lot on your calves, it makes it easier to handle the turf at Rogers Center. Or even, you know, the infield dirt last year, about halfway through the season, it was hard as hell. Like it got so, like players were complaining about how hard that dirt got.
Day one. I mean, it's amazing. Whenever you see Rogers Center and the turf is peeled back,
yeah,
it is a very thin layer, probably 3 inches, maybe 4 inches of surface underneath of which there is a concrete floor. Yeah. I mean, it's concrete. That's it.
Absolutely. So you know, playing on the dirt there isn't exactly any easier than being on the turf. So look, Josh Donaldson's a guy who pays a lot of mind to his calves, has worked on them a lot. So he had a calf injury last year. It was the other calf, but he played through it and he was fine with it. And he was still able to perform and still able to be the best hitter on the team and play great defense at third base. So for those reasons, I doubt my concern is going to go above the moderate where it is right now.
Yeah. And it's something to watch, you know, as the next couple of weeks develop, just seeing where he is. Is he able to go out there and take ground balls, or does he try to do some light running? I mean, it's really, there's some significant progress that he has to make before he's fully ready to play in a spring game, which can demand sprinting down the first baseline or trying to make a catch in foul territory. Like, he needs to be able to move around. And part of the reason that he's a 7-win player is because he moves well. He can run the bases. He can play defense. He needs his legs to be able to do that.
Nice to have, a Darwin Barney around who could take over at third if Josh Donaldson had to miss the first week of the season, say, which is like totally not a realistic scenario right now, but say it did happen, come to that. Darwin Barney could play third base and then Ryan Goins is your utility infielder.
Right.
The Blue Jays do have, like, it's obviously a significant drop off, but they do have options there.
Yeah. And we've seen Barney step in defensively. You know what you're going to get. And offensively, he's hitting eighth or ninth for you, and you hope for the best.
Speaking of knowing what you're going to get, do you know what you're going to get when you run into one Matt Latos?
No.
In Florida.
I don't know. Other than the fact that he is a very large person who has,
6'6", 245, according to Baseball Reference.
He is a big man, and he has had a lot of success at the big league level, and he has had a lot of struggles in the last couple of years. So it's going to be very interesting to see where he's at physically, how hard he's throwing. Is he touching 95? As he did on occasion at the end of last year when he was in the bullpen for the Washington Nationals.
Ben's rolling a rim right now, by the way. I want our listeners to know.
Let's hope.
That a rim is being rolled as we speak. Let's pause.
Okay.
Let's pause.
Donut is likely here.
Hopefully you don't get the potato wedges. People get pissed off. They get the potato wedges on the roll of the rim. They get upset.
Which is funny because it's technically a higher value item.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the most Ben thing I've ever heard. It's a higher value roll up the rim when...
Please try again.
Oh,
that's no good.
Sorry, bud. Yeah. Sorry, bud.
Well,
how's your record this year?
Pretty good. I've won like 5 or 6 times.
Have you?
I play a lot though.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a little addicted. You like to throw me under the bus for the caffeine addiction. You're up there, bud.
Oh yeah.
You're on the leaderboard.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not carving holes in the lids of my coffee by any stretch, but yeah, I consume a steady dose.
Anyway, you were talking about how Matt Latos once was good.
Yep.
Once was quite good. Lately, not so much.
Yeah, so there's a school of thought that says, okay, this guy has had 2 years. He's been with 5 organizations. He's bounced around. He's been out of shape. Why? Like, why? and I understand that. At the same time, you could say this is someone who has had success at the highest level, someone who has recently dropped 15 to 20 pounds, and someone who has shown more humility in the last 6 months or so than he did early in his career.
Interesting.
Certainly. So... you know, whether you believe that, you know, is really an open question. And I think that the Jays are going to be looking to see where he is, not only physically, but mentally, because you don't want to invite someone into your clubhouse unless you're sure of where he is. And Latos has a lot to prove, I think, at this point, because he comes to Toronto or he comes to the Blue Jays organization with a reputation for not being a good clubhouse guy. And this is his chance to turn that around. And, you know, the Jays, in exchange for giving him that chance, get the potential upside of someone who has retired a whole lot of big league batters.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about it when Pete Orr was in here on Friday. Go listen to that podcast, by the way. Great insight from former big leaguer Pete Orr about how this was a guy who was like on a track with a couple more years, like the ones he had, on a track for like a 9-figure contract.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this was going to be that guy. But all you really have to do to kind of, I think, to understand the decline of one Matt Latos is pull up the old Brooks baseball velocity chart. And you got yourself a line that takes a pretty steep dive. Goes down rather quickly right around 2014. This is a guy who used to be throwing 95 as a starter. Lately, it's been like 90, 91 as a starter. Not so good. He was saying that when he got to pitch out of the bullpen for the Nationals, I want to say. Yeah, for the Nationals. He didn't do it for the White Sox. For the Nationals, he was saying it was nice to look up at the board and see 95 again. well, you know, stuff's playing up. He's throwing all out, max effort. You know, like he was did not save anything in the tank. But his numbers as a reliever were very not good. It's an incredibly small sample, but nine and two thirds innings, seven earned runs, 11 hits.
Yep.
Not great. Clearly a transition there that did not go well for one Matt Latos. You know, you just wonder if he can be as effective without the velocity. You know, it's clearly the Blue Jays think there could be something there.
And they've watched him throw. I mean, before they signed him, they worked him out and tried to get a sense of where he was at and like what they saw. So, I mean, it is one of those low risk propositions. Is it a likely outcome that he's able to amp it up? I don't really know. I think that he's someone, you know, we talk about guys that we're looking forward to watching in spring training. I'm very curious because there's a big difference in how he projects if he's throwing at 89 versus at 93, 94.
And you can kind of see it in his pitch usage as well. I mean, he backed off the fastball pretty significantly last year. He just didn't throw it as much because, I mean, clearly it just wasn't as effective. Started going to a slider a lot more than he had been. Look, to me, he's insurance against an injury to the starting rotation.
Yeah.
To me, it's if Marco Estrada's back isn't quite ready at the beginning of the season, or if, you know, J-Hap feels something grab, or Aaron Sanchez feels an oblique something, if somebody needs like 2 to 3 weeks on the DL in April at the beginning of the year, Matt Latos is that guy who could fill that, you know, be that stopgap for 2 to 3 weeks, and then when one of the Blue Jays' ideal starting five is ready to come back, you decide what you do. You can either move him to the bullpen if he's been good, or you can just, you know, DFA him right there if he's been bad. To me, that's, you know, barring injury, I do not see a way Matt Latos plays himself onto this roster.
The bullpen would be one option. And I think there's a decent chance he's on the opening day roster. Not a great chance just because, as you outlined, the rotation is full. But there's a decent chance just looking at the, you know, the contract can sometimes tell you how a team assesses a player. And he got, you know, essentially the same contract that Gavin Floyd got. And, you know, Floyd is someone who's in the mix for them. Same with Salty Lamacchia. He got that same one and change guarantee on a minor league deal. Like, these are guys that they like, and they'll be taking a long look at those veteran type guys.
Do you get the sense that they prefer Latos to Floyd right now?
I think they might offer different things at this point.
Yeah.
And in a sense, if Latos can follow the template that Floyd set last year, they'd probably be pretty happy with that. Just because, you know, you look at Floyd gave them 30 innings, something like that, and he was pretty good. So if they were to get that kind of production, whether it's in the bullpen, maybe it's in the rotation, I don't think they need a lot of innings from Latos for this to be a successful deal for them.
Do you know if he has any kind of opt-outs in the deal?
He has two opt-outs, one at the end of spring and one during the season.
Right. Do you know when that is during the season?
I would imagine it's early, like May 15th or something. I don't know when it is, though.
If he gets to the end of spring, Matt Latos is talking about here, and if he gets to the end of spring and the Jays say, look, we don't have a rotation spot for you, but we'll take you north in the bullpen, do you think he might consider opting out and trying to start somewhere else?
I think he takes that.
Yeah.
You know, and this, we're, you know, a little bit, there are a few things that would have to happen for that to be the scenario, but I think he would take that. I think at this point, he's already pitched out of the bullpen. And, you know, broadly speaking, if you're a pitcher who's done both starting and relieving in Major League Baseball, you've got to be open to pitching out of the bullpen because you look around at the contracts that some of these guys get and they're pretty lucrative, you know, compared to some of the starting pitcher contracts. If you're a back-end starting pitcher like Jason Hamill, you're not even getting that much more than you would as a reliever.
Right. It's going to be interesting because something we'll have to give there because Mike Bolsinger's out of options, Bo Schultz out of options. We mentioned Gavin Floyd is around and now obviously Matt Latos is around. And, you know, you get the sense that they like Brett Oberholzer and his name just seems to come up a lot. Something's going to give because not all these guys are going to be able to stick around.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be one of the interesting parts of spring training because you look at their bench, it's kind of set, right? The bench is essentially...
You mean position player bench?
Yeah, their position player bench. I mean, we're assuming Salty Lamacchia.
As if there could be any other bench, but... Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
He's the guy.
I just had to call myself an idiot there. Sorry. So Salty Lamacchia, one of Goins or Barney.
Yeah.
And then who, you know, Carrera slash Upton, whichever one doesn't and then, start in left field.
And Pierce slash Smoke.
And then Pierce slash,
so
yeah.
So you're set.
So that's over. Yeah.
So the rotation's set, the starting lineup is set, the bench is set. The bullpen is going to be fun to watch. That's where we're going to see a lot of the intrigue. And I mean, I know we're diving deep here, but that's part of the fun of spring training.
But even like in the bullpen, like Osuna, Grilly, Howell, Smith, Biagini.
Two spots.
Yeah. We're talking about two spots here, yeah. Right? And we know they really like Chris Smith. You know, Danny Barnes, Ryan Tepera going to be up and down. You know, I mentioned the guys who are out of options, Bolsinger and Schultz. And then, yeah, you got the veteran guys like Floyd and Latos.
Veteran team, man.
There's a lot of guys for two spots.
Yeah.
And, like, really, if you want to try to preserve, you know, youngish depth, it's kind of Schultz and Bolsinger who have the inside track, no?
And you mix in Latos there, potentially.
But how do you get Latos in there? You can't. If you've got five spots counted for and you got two left and you got two out of options, guys.
He makes it if Bolsinger doesn't look good or if they don't like what Schultz is offering or, you know, or one of the other guys is on the DL to start the season. I mean, all these things kind of shift around as the spring progresses.
I just don't see Matt Latos on this team, assuming health.
No, that's fair.
Assuming health. I just, like, what has he shown?
Yep.
Really, over the last, and it's not, we're not just talking about like he was just bad last year. Like, you know, 2015 was a bit of a disaster as well.
It's an uphill battle. I mean, if they wanted to guarantee him a spot, they would have given him a 40-man spot in a major league deal. I mean, that they didn't want to, they didn't have to because of the struggles that he's had. So it is an uphill battle for him.
And then you know, you said the reputation is a bad clubhouse guy. Like that's not helping.
No, not like, at all.
That's not helping at all.
No, not at all. And I mean, he's looking to bounce back here. And it seems like, you know, reading the comments from spring training, it seems like he realizes that this is, you know, it doesn't fly to just assume the things are going to happen for you. He realizes that he's going to have to earn every opportunity he gets from here on in his big league career, whether it's with the Blue Jays or some other team.
Yeah, but could you imagine the gall if he walked in and was like, yeah, I know, I'll be on the team. Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm going to start for this team.
Well,
he had, you know what I mean? Like he had to say that stuff. Like I can be a nice guy for 10 minutes, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, right. So he has to, and then so they're going to see if it holds up or not.
He couldn't have walked in and said anything differently, right? Of course he's going to say he has to earn a spot on the team.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm sure, you know, like, you know, Marco Estrada will probably tell you that he thinks as if he has to earn a spot on the team. Even though he clearly does not.
Yeah.
He'll probably tell you no, but that's my mindset. That's how I stay hungry. You know, that's how I motivate myself.
Yeah. No, I mean it's true. So that's why those words only mean so much.
Right.
He's got to back them up.
Didn't he have some injury stuff last year too? A knee thing?
Yeah, in 14 he dealt with a knee injury that's kind of lingered for him.
Right. And that's been part of the reason why he hasn't been able to be as effective.
Yeah, it seems like that.
Oh. When the knees go, man, for a starting pitcher, just, you know, ask Ricky Romero about that.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That is not good.
No bueno. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we will just kind of clean up some odds and ends around this team as they complete their first week of spring training. All that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters.
Look for a ball on the inner half and see if you can do some damage. Bring in a fly ball deep to left. Knocked down by Smokey, he'll go to the bag. He robs Headley of an extra base hit by guarding the line. One out.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. You can follow Ben on Twitter at B Nicholson-Smith. Our producer is Sam McKee. You can follow him on Twitter at Sam A. McKee.
Where are you on Twitter? You don't drop that anymore.
No,
right?
Man. I got enough people writing me on Twitter, man. I don't need any.
You're
anymore.
Done. You're tapped out on
no,
Twitter.
No, I want people to unfollow me on
really?
Twitter. I'm the worst Twitter follower in the world.
No,
I'm a robot, man. I just tweet out my stuff.
That's why people follow.
That's it.
You.
That's all I do. Yeah. So only follow me if you want to know when I have something new out.
Yeah. That's why people
but
follow.
But I'm not going to like drop, you know, like opinions and things or like, you know, I'm not going to be personable and funny and jovial. Like that's just not how I use it.
Do you post lineups, like lineup pictures?
Sometimes. Yeah. If I'm the first one there and there's no one else there, I'm like, all right, I'll post this. But when.
Scoop.
When you get, exactly, but when you get to the lineup card and there's like five or six reporters and they've all got their phones out and it's, I'm not bothering with this. people are get, everyone's following everyone.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of my philosophy with it, where it's like, if it is actually news, then fine. Or sometimes like all, if somebody surprising isn't in the lineup, I won't post the picture or anything. I'll just be like, day off for Josh, or, you know, Josh Donaldson not in the lineup. You know, it's fucking Steve Pierce starting a third or whatever.
There you go. So yeah. Many reasons to follow you on Twitter. No, yeah, people man. Can't even find your handle.
No reasons. Like, it's, you'll find it. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But look, anybody who listens to this is probably following us on Twitter. Mm. And if you're not, then you probably have a good reason to.
True.
In my case, because I'm boring. Mm. I'm so boring on Twitter.
Well.
Every once in a while.
We'll leave that to the audience.
I go off the handle. But it's so, so rarely. Because you just don't get it. There's no, I do like a cost-benefit analysis of like when you tweet something. Very rarely is there a benefit. Very rarely. And generally, the costs can be massive. People get fired for their tweets.
Yep, they do.
You know? So like, I have no incentive to really put anything other than here's something that I wrote on Twitter.
Yeah. Keeping it simple.
Right? People know they can go to you for those hot takes, though, the spiciest of takes.
Exactly. That's what I'm all about.
I love, my favorite tweets of yours are just the, like, and you've told me this before, that you're not afraid to just tweet something obvious. Like, you're totally fine with that.
For sure.
I love the, like, incredibly obvious tweets that you put out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the Blue Jays home opener is this day. Yeah. Just tweet that out. And you'll get, like, 20 responses like, people, you know, talking crap.
Yeah. I don't mind tweeting, like, schedules, you know, just basic things. You know, who is hurt today, or who's someone's doing a little better. Just little updates. Yeah. Even just like arbitration is the process by which salaries are determined for 3 to 5 year service players.
Yeah, man. If you want the good Twitter takes, go to Blair. Blair will let it go on Twitter. He lets it fly.
Yes.
Yes. Jeff Blair on Twitter is that's a good time. He'll mix it up. There's just nothing to be gained with arguing. From arguing with people on Twitter, I don't think.
No.
But anyway, nobody cares about that. Do people care about the fact that Justin Smoak is probably going to be the Toronto Blue Jays' first baseman? They sure do. People not so happy. Justin Smoak is going to be the Toronto Blue Jays' first baseman. Look, the writing's been on the wall for quite a while. If you just look at who's in camp and what this roster is looking like, and you know what Justin Smoak's contract situation looks like. But Ross Atkins had to come out on one of the various programs. I don't even remember which one it was, but he came out and said, yeah, no, I mean, Justin Smoak is going to be our first baseman on opening day, most likely. And Gibby said the same thing too. Ross Atkins even said, our ideal lineup structure is Justin Smoak playing first base. What say you about this?
Well, I guess baked into that is the idea that ideally Justin Smoak would show a really strong offensive spring and a really strong defensive spring. And then the Jays would have more reason than they currently do to believe that he's in for a big season. Based on what we know now, I don't know that you ideally want Justin Smoak in there every day.
Yes. Now, it's based on what he's shown recently, based on basically the back half of his 2016.
Based on his career. You know, we have a body of work from Justin Smoak at the big league level. Based on that, I don't know if you want that guy in every day.
I feel like his, you're probably right. Yeah, his career hasn't been great as I look at it now. Yeah, I feel like there's a three true outcomes guy in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like there's a guy in there. Like, I feel like there's a Chris Davis somewhere in there where it's like, look, I'm going to hit a ton of bombs. I'm going to strike out a whole lot, and I'm going to take a good amount of walks.
Yep.
When I get up to the plate, those are the things that are going to happen. I'm gonna strike out. I'm gonna walk, or I'm gonna hit a ball like 700 feet. I feel like that guy should be in there.
Right.
Justin Smoak has just been too much of the strikeout guy.
Yeah.
Really, and too much of the like chase bad breaking balls guy. I think that he's talked about sometimes being caught in between where he's at the plate and he feels he should be looking for a fastball, but he's thinking a bit about the breaking ball. And then he's in between on which pitch he's looking for, which is never a good place to be as a hitter. He's talked a bit about that. And I think you can kind of see that sometimes in how he is at the plate.
The potential is unquestionably there. And you're not alone in thinking that. I mean, a lot of big league managers, hitting coaches, GMs, assistant GMs have thought the exact same thing, which is why he has nearly 3,000 big league plate appearances. The only thing is, in those plate appearances, his OPS sits exactly at 700. So he just hasn't delivered in the way that a lot of people expected him to. Now, maybe that changes in spring training and he's able to go out there and really impress. And that's, I think, the ideal situation that Atkins is talking about. But based on what we've seen so far, there are some unanswered questions, and I think at this point you have to project Pierce and Smoke in that mix.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think like ideal world is the Blue Jays have a left fielder that you feel really good. Like left field and first base are just with the way this lineup, this roster is constructed, kind of going to be tied to each other.
Yeah.
The ideal world, you have left, like, you know, Melvin Upton Jr. has a, you know, vintage year or something, if he even has a good vintage, and you know, is able to play every day there. So then Steve Pierce could play every day against first base, crush lefties, do pretty good against righties. You feel good about that. But with, you know, kind of question marks in left field, Ross Atkins even said, look, we'd like Steve Pierce to play some left field for us, which is kind of interesting in a way, because then you're going to have Melvin Upton Jr. and Ezekiel Carrera on your bench, assuming both those guys come north.
Well, yeah, exactly, because Pierce and Upton offensively are very similar. They're right-handed hitters. They really hit left-handed pitching.
I like Pierce more as a hitter and Upton more as a defender and runner.
Right, especially now that Pierce is kind of battling some physical questions as he tries to come back from surgery this late last season. So, yeah, Upton definitely the superior defender there. But if you talk about Pierce in left field, well, if Pierce is facing lefties, then what's Upton's role on this team? So that says to me that they aren't married to Upton as even necessarily a piece on this roster. If you talk about Pierce getting a lot of reps in left field, well, what's Upton then? I guess he could be your fourth, but you have Carrera for that.
Yeah, I mean, and look, if you had to cut bait on Melvin Upton, it's $1 million.
Yeah,
that's all you're paying him this year,
and you could trade him.
So yeah, exactly, and I think that a team would be pretty okay with you know, $1 million for Melvin Upton Jr. They'd give something up for that.
Yeah, nothing great, but of course, I mean, he's worth $1 million. Yeah, there's no question about that. You look around baseball, someone's going to have an injury. You look for someone who can play every day for you. He's had success at the big league level.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be a pretty quiet clubhouse presence from what we saw late last year anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He's not disruptive at all.
No, he's not disruptive at all. So, I mean, he can slot in and give you some value.
I feel like the case for Justin Smoke is, and this is kind of why it got his deal, is he had a strong 2015, not a good OBP, but he had a 768 OPS in 2015. There, you know, in basically half a season's worth of plate appearances, he hit 18 bombs. So, you know, it's kind of monkey math, but if you want, you could just double that and you end up at, you know, okay, well, this is a guy who over a full season could hit 36 bombs with a 768 OPS. Good 2015. And then a great start to 2016. 2016, you look at his May. In May, he had an 896 OPS, a 309 batting average. He was playing every day. He was great. He was walking a ton. He had 27 walks in 29 games in May. Like, you know, he looked great in May. So midseason comes around. The Blue Jays are looking at decent to good 2015. Really good start to 2016. Okay. 2 years at, you know, $8.5 million, whatever. All right, let's do that. And then he just kind of craters, like, unbelievably. So, but there is at least a decent case you can make that maybe Justin Smoke can be that guy again.
Yeah, and I understand at this time of year, you know, of all times, this is when you're going to look at a guy and see the best in him, see the potential that he has, especially when he's on a guaranteed contract and, you know, you've invested in him as an organization personally. You know, this is, of course, understandable that they would want that from Smoke. He's going to have to adjust from some struggles toward the end of last season to make that happen.
You can even look at I'm looking at the exit velocities right now over 2016. He was generally above league average, you know, like it wasn't off the charts, but he was above league average throughout 2016. So, you know, that's encouraging. If you're, you know, an analytics guy in the Toronto Blue Jays organization, we've kind of heard things about how analytics guys like Justin Smoke for whatever. Maybe they see that there is the three true outcomes guy in there, much like I do. I don't know, man. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to start the season with Justin Smoke as your first baseman. He has to be better than he was at the end of last year. And if he's not, I guarantee you he will have a very short string. And he could be in danger of losing his job if he, you know, has a bad first 3 to 4 weeks. He wasn't on the ALCS roster last year, so the Blue Jays clearly aren't afraid to go away from him if they have to. And really, over the last two seasons, I mean, we've seen that Justin Smoke has been very much in and out of the lineup. 341 plate appearances last year, 328 the year before. That's a half season's worth of plate appearances each time. So the Blue Jays clearly aren't afraid to move away from him.
Exactly.
You're going to give him a shot. If it doesn't work out, I imagine they'll quickly move away from him.
And the same goes in a broader sense for the entire position of first base, left field, bullpen even.
Yeah.
Whoever the hot hand is, that's what they're going to do. If the last few seasons are any indication, John Gibbons is not going to be married to the opening day roster, the opening day lineup, as the way the season has to unfold. He's going to want to adjust, and that's going to be based on who's performing.
Here's like my ideal scenario is that Kendrys Morales could play some first base.
Really?
That is don't you think that would be an ideal scenario? I don't like, it's asking a lot.
If you're in a National League park, yeah.
I would like to see him do it in AL parks because I think the Blue Jays are going to need that DH spot. Josh Donaldson's already on crutches. Jose Bautista had two injuries last year that required him to play a lot of DH. Troy Tulowitzki's like 33 this year, 34. Like, you know what I mean? Like a big ass shortstop. You're going to want to get him off his feet sometimes. Devin Travis is a guy who's had a pretty pickled injury history. He's going to need some DH at bats. Maybe you want to get Russ Martin a DH at bat here or there. You can't do that if Kendrys Morales is playing 150 games of DH. I think ideal world, Kendrys Morales is able to play first a little bit so that you can open up that spot.
How much do you mean by a little bit?
30 to 40 games.
Oh, man.
I know. That's asking a lot of a guy that probably hasn't done that in a long time.
Wow. I think
that would be great.
I think interleague only.
But then what do you, you don't have your DH spot, Ben. I mean, how do you get days off for these guys? You're going to take a big hit offensively in your lineup if you want to get Josh Donaldson days off to rest the calf injury that has been plaguing him all season.
So your choice then is you either give Morales a full day off,
yeah,
or you give Donaldson a full day off. I just...
Unideal.
It is.
How bad could he be at first base?
So I have some numbers for you, okay?
Nice.
So defensive ratings, according to FanGraphs, in the last 5 years. I'm just going to rattle them off, starting in 2012.
This is at first base? This is in general?
Overall.
Okay.
Negative 9.7. So that's 10 runs he cost his team. Negative 16.7. Negative 11.5. Negative 16.2. Negative 16.3. Now, I say those numbers with the knowledge that defensive numbers year to year can be highly variable, and particularly at first base, they can be pretty unreliable. But there's a trend there. We're seeing a lot of negatives. We're seeing a lot of big negative numbers. And you look at how his teams have used him, they don't play him in the field very much. That says to me that the Royals don't assess Kendrys Morales as a very good defensive player. And I don't see any reason why we should change that as he gets 1 year older.
You're going to take your cues from the Kansas City Royals team that hit Alcides Escobar first in their lineup repeatedly just because he was magic.
I'll take...
Quote... He's magic, he swings at the first pitch of the at-bat every single time because that's what works for him and gets him to his 300 OBP.
The Royals have had a good defensive team in the last few years, and that's been a big strength of theirs as they've advanced to the World Series back-to-back times and then had a decent team last year.
I would also point out that those are very small samples. Look, 2012, 28 games of defense.
Okay. How about his
2013, 31.
Is his career a big enough sample? Because if for his career, he's negative 77.5. That's a big negative number.
As a large negative
number. And I mean, Kendrys Morales has his strengths as a player. I think he obviously is going to help this team. He's a good big league player. I'm not trying to pick on him. I'm not trying to, you know, we've been down the path of discussing his contract and now he's just here and he's a good big league player. But I think he's a good big league player for reasons other than a first baseman's glove.
Last year, he played 5 games in the outfield. 5 games in right field.
Watch out, Kevin
for
Pillar.
Kansas City.
You got competition for that gold
again.
Glove.
This is the team that you're trying to like. They put him out there, and if they put him out there in right field for 5 games,
how many innings?
He started 5 games, 37 innings. They threw him out there in right field to start 5 games. It's not like it was just like a weird game type of scenario. He started 5 games in right field.
So what should we conclude from that?
Didn't make a single error.
Oh, so he didn't make an error. So then he's Billy Hamilton out there.
Hey, bud, he hasn't made an error since 2014. Let's remember that.
Okay, well, that's great that you're assessing players based on their error total.
He's only played 25 games in the field since then, or 20, maybe even 21, if I'm doing the math right.
I get what you're saying. I get, and
look, just how bad could he be at first base? I think there's different levels.
I just listed off the numbers.
But I think there's different levels to being bad at first base. If he can't catch throws from Troy Tulowitzki and Josh Donaldson, if he can't pick, that's a problem. That's a very real problem because the Blue Jays have ground ball pitchers. There's going to be a lot of ground balls to the left side. You need a guy such as Justin Smoke who is has a very good glove at first base. And if, you know, Josh Donaldson's been known to throw pretty wild, Troy Tulowitzki throws perfectly every time. Devin Travis has had his struggles throwing. So I think you do need a good glove there. But if we're talking about just does he get to the Rockets up the first base line, which Edwin Encarnacion did a very good job of, really. If he just isn't getting to those, are you maybe okay with that? Or would you, you know what I mean? Like, is that more tolerable than the guy who's dropping Josh Donaldson's throws from third?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And if you can just provide a steady amount of defense there, that's all they would be asking for.
If you can just get to those plays that are like, you know, those, you know, 80% and higher, you know, success rate plays,
yep,
maybe you're okay with that. Because yep, really, how many of those Rockets do you get at first, right?
Sure. It's something worth testing out. And spring training is the time for experimentation. Give it a shot. See what happens. But it's, you know, to me, it is an interesting question, actually. How good, how bad is Morales at first base defensively? I don't know. We haven't seen a lot of it. So yeah, we don't necessarily know. I suspect it's really not very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And find out, you know, like, and I wonder if some of those defensive ratings at first base, like, I'd like to see the whole league, you know what I mean? Like how many players in the league actually had really good positive defensive ratings at first base. Mm-hmm. Does that just factor in how many like unlikely plays you make? You know what I mean? Like, or if you make all the routine plays, are you a zero? You know what I mean? Are you even a little bit below? Like, you know, that also depends at first base. It depends on who's throwing you the ball, right? If you've got a third baseman who's like throwing off the mark all the time and you're having to pick and stretch and dive and all that kind of stuff, like, I feel like that could affect it.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of variables. I think that from everything that I've seen, heard, researched, he's not a good defender.
That is the general consensus across baseball, is that this is not a good defender. But it just would just help the Blue Jays so much to have that DH spot.
Yeah.
As you said, old-ass team, man. You're going to need some DH days. And I don't know if you're the Blue Jays, if you want to take the offensive hit of, you know, three or four times a week not having either of, you know, Morales, Donaldson, Bautista, whoever needs to play DH, not in the lineup.
The one thing you can do is pinch hit with him. You know, I mean, if you were to say put Donaldson at DH, Morales on the bench, high leverage spot, pinch hit with Morales, switch hitter. In that sense, he's a good pinch hitter, pinch hit option, because you can't turn him around, and you can't, you know, match him up with a tough same handed matchup. So you could get away with it that way.
Speaking of Jose Bautista, some interesting comments coming from him out of Dunedin. These are care of Shai Davidi. Follow him on Twitter at Shai Davidi and read him at sportsnet.ca. Here's some things Jose Bautista had to say. Quote, "I think in retrospect, I believe I can speak for myself and not for them," them meaning the team, "but I feel like I definitely could have handled things differently and maybe things would have played out different. Not necessarily changing the things that I said, maybe voicing them in a different setting and in a different way that might not get misconstrued and misunderstood the way that they did. It's part of not necessarily being acquainted with a new group that you're trying to get to know and negotiate, and all at the same time, that kind of thing happens. They didn't know me. I didn't know them. Getting to know each other, that needed to happen. That was the moment that we were in, and nothing was going to change that." Jose Bautista, self-effacing a little bit, a little humble,
yep,
a little step back from Jose Bautista.
Yeah, I would
interesting
say so. Yeah.
Interesting.
I thought that one of the interesting things about those comments were just the idea of talking about the same topic, but in a different setting. And last year when he talked about his contract, it was in front of the camera. It was in front of a lot of different people, some of whom he knew, some of whom he might not have known as well. Yeah. And you know, that means that they don't know him. They don't necessarily read him in the way that he is trying to communicate. So you'll notice these comments were made to three reporters, Shai Davidi, John Lott, I believe Richard Griffin was the third one. So it's a very smaller setting, guys they knew better. And so that's, you know, it's telling, because, you know, if you're Bautista, if you say something in front of the camera, boom, like it's going to become a big deal.
Yeah. Did you think that he meant by that he meant the statements he made to the media, or do you think that he meant the way he negotiated with the Blue Jays where they had this meeting during NBA All-Star weekend where he said, here's him and Jay Lou said, here's what I want, and I ain't moving off of it.
Maybe all of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the way it unfolded, you know, it doesn't make Batista look very good, right?
No.
So he's surely aware of that. And as he says at the end of that piece, he's playing baseball. He's making a lot of money. I don't think he's dwelling on it, but you know, when you look back, there are different ways that it could have been handled. And it's interesting to see him acknowledge that.
Yeah. You know, I think that if any, you know, Jose Bautista could certainly benefit from a bit of a karma turn, perhaps. Maybe he's trying to just present a softer version of himself. Maybe he found out in free agency this year that, like, oh, hey, teams don't really like me.
Yeah.
And this ain't helping me make money.
Right.
And, you know, you just look at last year was a bad year for Jose Bautista. His year started with, like, all this stuff that we're talking about where he came out with his contract. Well, he didn't come out with them, but the demands got out there and he had the presser in Dunedin where he was, I won't negotiate this and that, talking about hometown discounts, all this stuff. And everybody basically universally laughed at him and said, 5 years, 150? Word? And then he had two injuries during the year. Which both sent him to the DL, which were both pretty like freak injuries. He ran his, you know, foot into the wall and then he, you know, caught his cleat on the turf. This is pretty crappy ways to go down. He got punched in the face in Texas and became like the most gift moment of the MLB season, played ad nauseum over and over and over again. And just fans were showing up with signs of it. There was a photographer just took a perfect picture of it with his sunglasses flying off. Like,
great shot.
You know what I mean? Like it was just the perfect storm of, you know, just imagine living your life and having to wake up every day and that's just plastered all over the media and everybody in North America is talking about that. And then he goes to free agency and as, you know, a guy who's hit like, you know, has over 300 home runs in his career, a great hitter, a guy who's had like, you know, 5, 6, 7 win seasons and ends up getting a 1 year deal for $18 million. It's a bad year.
It is. Yeah.
So he needs to turn the karma around here.
Right. And maybe this is part of that whole process. I think with Batista, we've seen it so many times and last year, absolutely a rough year, but we've seen his fortunes shift. I mean, from being utility player to being a 54 home run guy to being the bat flip guy to being, to going through all of the ups and downs that he had in 2016, it's going to happen again. I mean, this is the Jose Bautista story is still ongoing. And so that's what we have to look forward to this year. I mean, I don't think that this is where it kind of settles. I think there are more developments to come.
In terms of
Bautista, I mean, he's someone who ends up in the spotlight. We've seen him end up in the spotlight how many times?
No, that's true. He does kind of, just everything he does kind of create discussion.
Yeah.
In a way. Which is what makes him so interesting. It's why I'm so, like, I couldn't be more pleased that he is back. Because it's just, he's so interesting. Like, he's such a fascinating athlete. For all those reasons you just listed. Like, his career track is unlike any that we have really seen, right? Like, it's, you know, I get, you know, you can kind of compare him a bit to Encarnacion. But Encarnacion was, you know, still a power hitter in Cincinnati and early with the Blue Jays. Like, it was clear that he was, you know, a talented bat. Jose Bautista, like you said, went from like utility guy to one of the most feared hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
It's amazing what he's done. And then, yeah, you know, his public comments, as you alluded to, are always thought out. They're always calculated. He's got a reason for what he says and he's not afraid to say, you know, sometimes, I don't think salacious is the right word for it, but you know, sometimes
maybe inflammatory.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Sometimes provocative things.
Yeah.
You know, he's such a insanely intense competitor. It's just a fun player to watch and have around, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's someone that I certainly thought was going and here he is. Mm-hmm. He's back for 162 more.
Entire world thought he was going.
Yeah.
And something changed. 11th hour. What else have I got on my list here? Russ Martin's going to WBC. Just kind of hang out with his buds, kick it.
It's like a long weekend.
Keep
right?
it real.
He's
exactly.
gone for a few days.
Yeah, he's going up to, you know, he's going to the beach for a few days, you know? Like, it's, I think some people have had a problem with it. People are just looking for things to have a problem with
totally
right
fine.
Now. Like, it's, you know, like, just get over it. Yeah. It's the same starting rotation as last year. There's two new arms in the bullpen. Joe Smith and JP Howell. Those are the two guys he has to learn. Otherwise, it's the same team. He's catching the same guys. It's Russell freaking Martin. He's one of the best defensive catchers in baseball. What are you worried about?
Yeah. Again, it's...
Don't make a thing of
this. If anything, it's not the worst idea for him to get a little bit of a break for his legs.
Go stuff it. Yeah. And even a mental break is
sure.
Nice, you know?
Mental just break.
To
exactly.
Get away from it. Like,
yeah.
What do you really think these guys are doing during spring training? You know, like as catch, like you're catching bullpens. Maybe you have a few discussions with pitchers, but like these guys are about to spend 7 straight months together. There's going to be enough time to ask JP Howell about his curveball.
Yeah.
It's going to be fine.
There's some grunt work for that they can let the Juan Graterols of the world do.
Exactly.
You know, and hey, that's actually good for him because then he does get to learn these pitchers.
Yeah. Devin Travis and Steve Pierce, not quite ready to play yet. Devin Travis knee surgery, Steve Pierce elbow surgery. Doesn't sound like anybody's too concerned about them being ready for opening day, but they are going to be brought along slowly in spring training, which I guess is something to look at.
Yeah, and I think that Travis in particular, mm-hmm. just coming back, because we saw the ups and downs of it last year. He tried to play through some of those knee issues before having to go under the knife after the season, and he's key for them. I mean, as you look at Donaldson, you look at Travis, basically any one of their everyday players that you start to think about having to do without them for any kind of extended stretch, it's a big one to watch.
Yeah, anytime you're looking, you know, you're talking about Devin Travis and injuries, that's going to pique your interest a little bit. Steve Pierce, too. Like, fans aren't that familiar with Steve Pierce, but he's had a rather decorated injury history as well. But, you know, this was an elbow procedure that he had done to, you know, repair something that was nagging him for a long time. Another element of Steve Pierce's reputation around baseball is that he'll play through anything. He's kind of like that gamer who will go out when he's hurt, and, you know, he's pretty old school in that regard. And I actually talked to him recently, and he was talking about how, you know, getting in with the Blue Jays high performance department and some of their trainers down in Dunedin, and he was saying, look, I'm working out in a different way than I ever have before. You know, I don't lift heavy weights anymore. I'm not throwing weight around. I'm doing flexibility and you know, elastic bands and all this stuff, like all this kind of progressive stuff. He thinks it's helping him. That can only be a good thing. A full season of Steve Pierce would be cool to see because we just haven't seen that. Say the same thing for Devin Travis.
Yep.
A full season of Devin Travis. I'm like very interested to see what Devin Travis could be with a full healthy season, because he's another guy who's played hurt a lot over the last couple of years and has had to go on and off the DL because he doesn't get that shoulder thing looked after. He tried to play hurt through the knee in the postseason last year and it looked excruciating. It'd be great to see a full season of those two guys and see what they really could be with 600 plus plate appearances.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Steve Pierce at this point in his career, you probably don't count on him for 600, but if you get 400, it's probably a win for the Jays. And with Travis, you know, there's still that hope that he can develop into that everyday player. And it would be a lot of fun to watch what he could do out there if he played 140, 150 games.
Devin Travis he's basically in his career over 2015 and 16, he's got a season's worth of plate appearances. He's got 163 games, 671 plate appearances. He's got an 811 OPS.
300 hitter.
301 hitter for his career. There is something there, and we see it. And that includes some really deep funks when he was hurt and he couldn't do anything. When he had that shoulder thing, remember when you'd watch him like take a cut at a ball and he'd miss and he would be wincing and like grabbing his shoulder and just feeling awful? Like there's a good hitter in there when healthy. And I like it would just, you know, it would be so beneficial to the Blue Jays if he could have a full season and really show them, you know, what they got for Anthony Gose.
Yeah.
What a deal.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, and you trace it back all the way to the Halliday trade. That's really the last remaining vestige of the Halliday trade for the Jays.
That's right, yeah. Is Kyle Drabek anywhere this year?
I don't believe so.
What about Travis d'Arnaud?
Mets.
Is he like their backup catcher? I don't follow these guys too. I don't have that like weird Blue Jays ex-girlfriend thing that a lot of people have. What did Syndergaard do yesterday?
It's kind of fun, actually, watching what those guys do.
I know.
Darno is their starter, is he not?
He's their starter, yeah.
Yeah.
He's had his own injury.
Yes.
Injury concerns, no?
Yes.
Another thing that we could quickly touch upon, Marcus Stroman, who is not short on confidence, came out this week and said he believes the Toronto Blue Jays have the best rotation in Major League Baseball. I would argue that they don't have the best rotation in the American League East. But they're certainly a top 10 rotation, perhaps even top 5 I would say you could probably safely say top five in baseball. The Red Sox have a good rotation, man.
Great rotation. I mean, if you have the Cy Young winner slotted in third, you're pretty good. Sale, Price, Porcello, that's a great combo. And then they back it up with depth as well.
People forget how good a guy like Stephen Wright was last year.
Really good.
He was really good for them. They got Drew Pomeranz in there, who's a guy who's always had good potential.
He's an all-star last year. Yeah. Rodriguez has potential too.
Yeah.
So Boston, I think, is ahead of Toronto. In the American League too, you got to look at Cleveland. They got a great, look at Kluber, Salazar, Carrasco as your top three. Pretty impressive group there.
Yeah, people forget because they all got hurt last year, but people forget how good that rotation is.
Rounded out with Bauer and Tomlin. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think too, you could point to the Mets, you could point to the Nationals. The Cubs, of course, have a good rotation.
Yeah.
Lester, Hendricks, Lackey. I mean, that's a really strong group. So, yeah, I think Stroman, for a guy who's always confident, seemingly, yeah, of course you expect him to say that sort of thing. And it's not unreasonable either. They had the best ERA in the American League this past season, so you'd expect them to be confident. I wouldn't say they're the best, personally, but they're very good.
I'd say they're second in the American League East. After the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Look, the Rays, you got what? Archer, Odorizzi, Cobb.
Snell. Right?
Snell, yeah. The Yankees, what? Tanaka. Is Sabathia going to start this year? You have to assume he will, right?
Tanaka, Sabathia.
Pineda.
Pineda,
yeah. It's kind of, there's kind of a middle group there. Certainly the Orioles are the worst rotation.
Oh, yeah.
But, Severino, I would say, I'll give the Blue Jays second best in the AL East, and then say the Yankees and Rays are right there with them. I think that middle group, Blue Jays, Yankees, Rays, are all kind of comparable. Maybe the Blue Jays are the separator because look, Francisco Liriano's your five, which is pretty good, right?
Great.
And if Jay Happ and Marco Estrada can do what they've been doing over the last couple of years, Sanchez is phenomenal, and if Stroman can take another step, then they're pretty safely the second best. But I do not agree that they are the best in baseball.
I think that's entirely fair.
And last one, I just wrote down the name Troy Tulowitzki because I feel like we don't talk enough about the fact that Troy Tulowitzki is a Toronto Blue Jay. And the fact that, look, this is a guy who was on a Hall of Fame track, probably isn't anymore, but he was on that track. He talked a lot this week about, he said he's trying to do something that's never been done before, which is be a really big shortstop who plays, every day into his mid-30s. And we do take for granted how good he is defensively. Like, near perfection. And to be doing that at, and I should apologize to Troy, because I said earlier that he was 33, 34. He's 32 today. This is his age 32 season. At his size and his age, to be as flawless as he is in the field at shortstop is remarkable.
Yeah.
It is incredible. And his, he certainly doesn't make things easy for himself. Throwing on the run, ridiculous rainbow throws that he pulls off. We haven't seen it in a while, so you forget about it. Really good defensive shortstop.
Yeah, he's an anchor for this team, offensively and defensively. You look at a guy who is going to be one of their most relied upon hitters. Yeah. Set aside the position. They need his bat. Mm-hmm. And then you look at what they need from him defensively, and it's gone under the radar. You don't notice him a ton out there because, other than those kind of long, looping, almost underhanded throws, he's not necessarily going to make flashy
plays.
Yeah,
it's not flashy.
Yeah.
You're right.
But it ends up working. I mean, it's really effective, and he's a big reason that their run prevention is that good. You look at their defensive efficiency, how often they turn a batted ball into an out. He's a big reason that they were tops in the American League last year.
Just watch Justin Smoke's glove at first. A lot of times when Troy Tulowitzki makes a great play, Justin Smoke just stands there. It just hits him right in the chest, It's amazing, his accuracy. And he clearly works at it a lot. Clearly works hard at it. And I think that, fans sometimes get a little too caught up in his offensive numbers. I think he's going to be a bit of a streaky guy. He's always kind of been somewhat streaky. Maybe he's more consistent earlier in his career, but I remember I was talking with you about it on some program, and you reminded me of that September where he hit 13 bombs or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be a streaky guy, but you look at last year, he had some very serious offensive struggles. Fans were very upset. He ended up finishing the year with 24 bombs, a 761 OPS. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
For your amazing defensive shortstop, sign me up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What I mean? $20 million, fine. That's perfect.
If you can replicate that, then you're set. And he is someone who's you know, become quietly
a leader
on that mm-hmm. team. You know, very much
not so quietly anymore. I think it's very much coming to a forefront now.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still quiet in the way that he does it, though.
Right.
Yeah. And, again, going back to Pete Orr and his comments, I don't think that he necessarily announced himself as the leader, but yeah. he's a central figure to that team.
I think Troy Tulowitzki, wherever he goes, he just kind of takes over as the leader. I remember when he first came over and he was telling me that he was kind of, he liked coming into a clubhouse where he's not the guy, where he's not the big dude, right? Like he looks around and there's Jose Bautista, there's Josh Donaldson, there's Russell Martin. And he felt like, in Colorado, I was always the guy, and I'm kind of looking forward to, just kind of being, taking a bit of a backseat now and not having to be that dude. But then here he is, and he has emerged very much as that dude.
Very much.
Blue Jays clubhouse leadership rankings. I would say JD and Troy are 1-2, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean? Russell Martin does it in a quiet way. Martin more so with the pitching staff, I think, than with the position players. Jose Bautista is definitely a presence. But I think that it might be Troy Tulowitzki 1, Josh Donaldson 2 at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. From what we can tell, at least, and
from the very limited time we get to spend in there, I should say.
Yes. From what we can tell, I would say, Yeah.
No, that's been an interesting development, but I think that, wherever he goes, that's just what Troy Tulowitzki is going to do. I think that's just how he's wired.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he seems to be embracing a kind of new phase of his career where he's that veteran guy. He's not the up and comer. He was once that blue chip prospect. He was once that up and coming, put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated young player. And now he's a veteran guy and he seems to be embracing that.
That's kind of the cool thing about our jobs and following these guys from year to year is you do see how they, because we kind of sometimes forget that we're dealing with dudes in their early 20s, right? I was a dickhead in my early 20s. Everybody was, right? But you watch how they develop and how they, grow. And watching how Aaron Sanchez has changed from year to year has been fascinating. I think this year is going to be really fascinating to see how he, now that he's done it and led the AL and ERA, and now that he's got another year older, another year of maturity, another year of development, it's going to be really interesting to see how he, develops just as a man, as a human being. We've seen how Marcus Stroman's personality has changed quite a bit over his time, in the major leagues. It is interesting to kind of track how, I think that if people in, I think Pete Orr, we keep talking about Pete Orr, but I think that he was saying he had friends in the game who knew Josh Donaldson when he was with Oakland. And now they say, who is this guy? This is not the Josh Donaldson that I knew. So it is kind of interesting to track that.
For sure. In a lot of ways. And I think that, whether it's changes for the better, whether it's changes where you're almost surprised and it's a little shocking at times, but it's part of the fun.
Totally. And this has been a fun podcast and we shall wrap it up now. You're off to Dunedin. We'll talk to you maybe later this week or maybe next week. We're definitely going to talk to you.
Exactly.
The ATLs do not stop.
No.
Even if the Blue Jays don't give us much to talk about, the ATLs do not halt.
No. We had a lot this week though.
Yeah, we had a good amount. Yeah. We stretched a little bit, but we had a good amount. Enjoy Florida.
Will do. See you down there.
Yeah, man. Yeah, see you in a couple weeks. Thanks to Sam for producing, and thanks to all you for listening. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time on At the Letters.